Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this Monday morning, February 20th, 2012. And it's about 10:06 Eastern Time a.m. We're going to run till about 10:58 Eastern Time a.m. We're happy to take your calls. I'll give you that number in a second. But after, if you're listening to this archived, which you can, and we'll talk about the website for that, don't call. But you're free to email us. Anyway, we have a special guest. All of our guests are special. Mike Townsend, and Mike is the president of Carpe Diem. Did I do that right?
Yes, that's it.
All righty. And Michael is a retirement planning coach, author, fellow seminar presenter, and great sense of humor. Good morning, Michael.
Well, good morning, Bob.
Or should I say Mike? Can I say Mike?
I prefer Mike.
Okay, good. All right. But, you know, I never know. So, anyway, so we were talking in the proverbial green room before we went on. And where are we going to start this? And we can start this journey at pre-retirement. We can talk about people that are in mid-career that should be concerned about people in pre-retirement. And we can talk about people beyond that. If we go to the beginning career, nobody's going to listen. So you pick the start, and I'll follow you.
Well, I think when we talk about pre-retirement, we probably should define what group are we really aiming at. And those being, I would say age 50 plus. Once you pass that age 50 mark, a lot of us, that's when we really start to get serious about. We sort of wake up and realize that we're not in this for the long haul, or at least the long haul is behind us, and now we have the big finish coming up of our career. And as a result, that's when a lot of questions come up. It's very rare much before that, but that's when questions come up. And I think that's a good group to address, although some of the concepts that I want to talk about today will really impact all ages. So I'll indicate what that is when we get to it.
Okay, so if we're looking at the glide path down, we were talking about your own personal situation, if I can bring that up.
Sure.
You had kind of a unique, and you created a contract kind of with yourself, but for somebody else to follow.
Yes.
Upon your incapacitation or upon your ill health or upon your passing. Now, tell me about that, because I don't know that I've ever heard that from anyone before, and
okay.
I really like it.
Well, I'm glad, and let me start by telling you that and telling our audience that I am now in my mid-60s. There was a time when
but he doesn't look it.
But Lord, I don't look it, absolutely. And how astute of you to pick up on that. And don't change your prescription for your glasses, whatever you do. So I tell you my age because about a little less than 10 years ago, I had a heart scare that could have gone very badly. I'm still here, therefore we can all attest it did not, or at least I came out of it. But in the course of the unfolding of learning what was wrong, what was the fix going to be, what were the risks, and so forth, that was in my 50s, my aha moment. That was when I said to myself, what more do I need to do to really live out the rest of my life and to accommodate those around me, because I'm not married. I was not married at that point. I do have children and grandchildren. However, nobody really knew my circumstances financially or my wishes, because I didn't have the significant other person that I might have shared that with, which I would hope people do. Because that was the case, and because I was going into surgery, into open heart surgery, I made a list of what are the major done before they cut me open. And one of those things had to do with my finances. It occurred to me that my finances were clear. They were well known to me. I knew what I had and where it was, but no one else would know that. And coming out of the surgery, if I had come out and been unable to communicate in some way, in some sort of vegetative state, this would be a problem because no one would know how to access what I had or even what it was and how to get to it. So, I thought about it then also in relation to lots of people, even those who are married, who have a significant other, that the fact is that a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people think that they communicate with each other, but in fact, because they talk to each other at 50,000 foot levels and they're not specific about things, when one of them becomes incapacitated or dies, that survivor very often is in a state of confusion as to what to do, where are things, how do we pay for things, particularly if they were not the one, which often happens, if they were not the one who took care of those things all the way through the relationship, and now here at the end, it is embarrassing to realize that the one who went first was, I like to call them Moneybags, because Moneybags knew it all, but Moneybags took it all with him or her upon their demise. And I thought to myself, you know, the same is true for me. If I should die, how would anyone get a hold of what there is? So I created in the days before the operation, I was at home, I created a document. I didn't know what else to call it, so I called it a financial roadmap. Very simple document. It's in Word. I basically created a table, and down the left-hand column of the table, it listed. I listed every one of my accounts. I'd never done this before, but every account, cash accounts, savings accounts, investment accounts, the credit cards, everything. The next column over was the URL or the internet address for the company that held the account. Next column over, the account number. Next column over, the username, and the last column was the password. Now, I could have added another column to put the amounts in, but I thought, well, we need to have a little mystery in all this, so I'll just let them find that out if they ever should have to do this. But I made that list. I was very proud of it. When my son, my eldest son, came to pick me up for the operation, wee hours of the morning, I had him come in first and took him into my den, and I pointed to a box, and I said, in that box are all of my financial records. I put them all into one place. All the files were in one place. I lifted the top of it, and across the top was this document. And I said, that document, and you'll see the title there, it says Roadmap. That contains how to access everything that's in this box. And should I die? No, excuse me. When I die. We need to. I need to stop saying should I die, because I'm gonna die. Mm-hmm. I get that. I understand that. I won't pass. I won't move into the next plane. Mm-hmm. I'm going to die. And I said to him, when I die, which maybe in a few hours, or maybe 20 or 30 years from now, whenever it is, you are to come to my home, wherever I'm living at the time. Find this box. Open it. On the top of the box will always be this document. I've updated it. It is still there to this day. I've updated it a few times, only a couple of times, because only one of my companies got bought by another one, and they changed the account number. But otherwise, there's no reason to make any change. And there it is. By the way, my son, I've always known, or I've known for many years, that his wife is the one who takes care of all the finances in their relationship. I know that. She is Moneybags for them. So I said to him, when you come to get this document, You are to take it to your wife. Hand it to her respectfully, and she will know what to do. And he said, thank you, because he knew he didn't want to do it. And if he's listening, sorry to let that little secret out. By the way, it's no secret to anybody. So that's the document that in my mind allows me some peace of mind. It allows me to know that when I die or I become incapacitated, somebody can access the information about my finances, all in one place, in an easily readable, easy to follow document. And there's a great benefit to that, which is kind of a theme in my life. That theme is, I'm in charge. I always have been.
Do you have a will? It's none of my business.
Yes, indeed.
And he's
yes.
named as
I did not have it before.
But
I
he's
found
the administrator
was,
of the will?
He is.
Okay, good.
Yes. He's the recipient of most of the will, but he's not the administrator. I take that back. My lawyer is the administrator.
Okay, but the lawyer would know of this as well.
The
black box, if you will.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
So these.
I know the attorneys are listening, going, well, Mike. Okay, good.
I've had some pushback on this from people who are very security conscious, who have said, but don't you leave yourself open to, I mean, anybody could come in and steal that and then they could access everything of yours. To which I respond, yes, that's true. I am not, however, laying awake nights listening for sounds in the apartment in the event that someone is breaking in, because I don't want to live my life that way. There always can be foul play. Of course, I understand that, but I'm not going to. I really wanted this to be a much easier path to follow.
Okay, you're an organized person. What if I was? Well, I am somebody's son, and I'm 35, mm-hmm. and I'm 40, and I see my parents slipping away a little bit, but they don't have the black box.
Sure.
They don't want a black box. They don't even know what a black box is. Mm-hmm. How do I approach them? I mean, you're a coach here, so coach, how do I get in the game without hurting anybody?
Well, first of all, I think talking is better than not talking. Silence is the great will become more and more the problem itself in this kind of a relationship. Therefore, now one thing that a person can do, and I'm glad you asked that question, because I want to let people know that if they would like a copy of the document. Not filled in, of course, but a copy of the document in Word and so forth. They only need to go to my website and they can download it.
And what is your website?
I'm glad you asked. It's an easy to remember, www.mybestdayistoday.com.
Do that again slowly.
www.mybestdayistoday.com. And go to a page that says books and materials. And on that page, there will be an indication about several things that you can for free download onto your computer. It will come down in Word. And the reason that I made it this way is so that if anybody else would like to have a place to start in the conversation with their significant other or their parent or their child, it's often best to have a document, to have something in hand to say, Mom, Dad, here's something that others are using that if you fill this in, it will help you to know for each other's sake where everything is. I merely offer it as an option. And if you'd like to share it with me, that's great. If not, that's your choice. Some parents will want to, some will not. I did want to for the reasons that I indicated.
Okay, Coach, now we're dealing with a team. There's a brother, there's a sister, there's sisters, brothers.
Yes.
Who's the captain of the team?
I think the captain of every team should be the parent for as long as they are able to do that. There comes a time when a parent has to step back because their capabilities cognitively and physically are not such that they can be in the game, so to speak. And what will happen, you know, I do a lot of family counseling with where there's an elder involved, so if there's an elder issue. And basically my counseling is to help the family talk to and hear, more importantly, hear the elder. Families often can't. They can't without some help. They just can't hear her or him, the adult, the older, the elder. They can't hear them. And they can't hear them in many cases because it's human nature. We, families, interesting phenomenon, we do not lose the established dominances and patterns that we established when we were children. I had a group not too long ago, six people in the room, plus the elder, so seven. And the six were all siblings. Not a one of them was under age 50. But you would have thought they were a group of teenagers. That from the moment they walked in the door, with the eldest sister scolding the youngest 52-year-old for there you go again, and you're saying the same kind of things you always say, and so forth, trying to establish her dominance. Those things, by the way, that's why they often need an objective third party who's skilled at helping people talk to each other and helping them listen to each other, and then find together a central idea. It is mediation. It is true mediation more than anything else, helping the family to talk to each other on the behalf of the elder.
I like what you said. I'm going to give you a personal, real experience.
Okay.
This was many years ago when I was a whole lot younger. And this gentleman and I did some business together. He was a fine person. The family were fine people. And we had a contract for something. And in the contract, I had a first right of refusal to buy this thing. How I would ever get the money at that point was beyond me, but I had it. The gentleman invited me over with the family to his bedroom. He was very ill. He was older. The brothers were older. The kids were older, but they were all in there. And he said, I would like to do this with Bob. Unfortunately, he passed a few weeks later. And I called up the attorney and I said, I'm ready. And he goes, the man was out of his mind with disease and you're not getting anything, but we will still do business with you, but you're not buying the thing. And there's no way around that. The attorney was probably right. But it gets back to your comment, if not from a selfish point, but if this was in writing and everybody wasn't maybe grieving that was in there knowing the person was going to die, it said, we're not going to sell it to Bob. We're going to sell it to our kids. Mm-hmm. But if they had followed your advice earlier, I would have never gotten happy. I was going to retire. Anyway, so here I am a scant 30 years later. Anyway, but I like what you did, and if they had heard you too, the children, they could have said, "Hey, Pop, let's you got this thing. Let's make sure that it stays in the family or it does whatever." And mm-hmm. And fortunately, it did. So
yeah.
So if you're coaching, then you would coach the individual. Now you also do retirement coaching. So beyond this list thing, when is it too early to come to you and talk about retirement? I mean, I'm probably should be retired, but I'm never going to retire. But, do 35-year-olds come? Do 40-year-olds come? Or do they all wait till a year before they're going to quit?
The latter, unfortunately, because I think that in their 30s, there's a lot to learn. Because part of what we do is to do assessments to understand who you are, and for you to understand, more importantly, who you are, and try to relate that then to what retirement choices will exist, then create a plan to get to those choices, rather than the way that most of us do, which is save what you can, hope that Social Security is not eviscerated any sooner than it will be, and that we somehow will, and then we'll make do when the time comes. Let's see what there is when the time comes. And my advice to people is the earlier we start planning by knowing who we are and being clear about the kind of activities that will most be enjoyable to us. It's amazing how many married couples I've talked to who actually didn't know until we talked that they vehemently disagreed on even the location of their retirement. The classic, he thought they were heading to the mountains. She thought they were heading to the beach. And so unless they go to Maine, where you can get both in one, they had a conversation coming. And, so we decided to have it right then and talk about what are the compromises, what are our ways to find a middle ground and so forth. But to have that conversation when there was plenty of time still financially and realistically to plan for that, it has a lot of tentacles that touch areas such as, should we buy a house here or just rent? Or should we buy a house at the shore? Or should we rent one every summer when we go? When it's put into the context of what is our eventual plan, then the interim decisions take on a different pallor, and we feel more comfortable making those decisions based on what we are in agreement we're going to do later on.
Okay, I'm going to continue asking questions, but if you don't mind, I'm going to put the phone number out so maybe somebody else can answer the
the
questions. All right, we're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. Talking with Mike Townsend, president of Carpe Diem, retirement coach, author, and actually planner as well, regardless of the age, as we've discussed in the last 20 minutes or so. So please give us a holler. And it can even be on a subject that's tangent to it. It doesn't have to be on the direct point. Is that fair?
Sure. That's fair.
Okay. And we don't need to talk tax or finance, but if you wanted to do that, I suppose I could answer something like that.
I'll try to think of a question.
Okay, good. What are the tax rates going to be in 2012 or 13? I don't know. All righty. So we got a lot of people moving into the baby boomers. You and I, I suppose, are the leading edge of the baby boomers, and there's 10, 12 years behind us moving through this. And it's never too early to start within that group. And it's probably the 30-somethings listening to this ought to at least listen to it. And they unfortunately may be faced with some of these decisions. Now, one of the toughest things to do, as I think we talked in a prior show, is take the keys away from dad for the car.
Sure.
How do you do that? How do you extract that tooth with the least pain?
If it's left until the moment, it meaning the conversation is unaddressed prior to the time when an action needs to take place, I can predict that it will always be an ugly conversation. And for reasons that we all can understand, losing the car keys means losing freedom. For most of us, it is synonymous, particularly in an area like this, where the car is our way of getting from place to place. But having said that, I do offer to folks what became for me an important document that, again, is on my website that can be not filled in, of course, but the bare bones of it can be downloaded. And I called it a care contract. It is a contract that I wrote between my family and me because I don't want there to be the classic angst and when the time comes for something like taking my car keys. There are others. There are other things, but that is certainly one that jumps to mind, because right in the same category, there are such things as how long should I, can I, would I want to live on my own? At what point, what would have to happen for me to go into the next level of care, so to speak? And who decides that? In many relationships, those things are decided by the family as they go. Just Kentucky windage, or the doctor may recommend, I think it's about time for you guys to consider that he or she needs something and so forth. So that's in the same category as my car keys and my independence.
How do we get around this? We got the family council, okay, and we've anointed somebody to be the council chair, but... And the other chairs are generally siblings. They may be brothers and sisters of the person. And you know, if there's more than one, mm-hmm. there's going to be, they don't really need to go. Now, why do they feel that way? It could be from a selfish standpoint that means it will dissipate the assets because it's more expensive to live in one of these places than it is in a mortgage-free home. It may be, dad or mom would be really comfortable here with the surroundings. And how do you get in the middle of that and try to say, well, but?
Well, what do you do? Yeah, with a sheet of armor on, I would hope. I have seen families torn apart over those kinds of basic questions. And in many cases, absent listening to the voice of the elder, or trying to get through to them. Now, once a person enters age, of course, all of us, starting in our 40s, our cognition begins to deteriorate. And but for some, we will actually, and of course, it's a pretty hefty percentage, are going to actually have a disease that either Alzheimer's or one of the other cognition diseases that will fuzzy our thinking, to be generous. And because that's the reality, because that can happen, to put these conversations off until they absolutely have to be held, which is often when I'm called in, and hence I'm writing a book to encourage people to have the conversation earlier than that. While mom and dad can still participate, have it when you can hear their wishes. Now, I did that with my family, and I ended it with a contract, which I call a care contract. And the reason I did it that way was so that while I'm still cognizant enough to express my view, my wishes, how I'm to be handled, to include when to take the car keys, which I was very specific about on one particular page, and they can get a copy of that page. And the reason is that I don't want anyone else to have to live with the responsibility of making a decision for me. Because now, or at least a few years ago when I did this, I'm fully capable of deciding for myself. What are the things? So I iterated which I got right off the National Transportation Safety Board's website. I got a listing of the most common reasons that a person should no longer drive. And I put that into the document, and I got my family to acknowledge, okay, oh, I see. So when you're doing those things, then that's when we should take your keys. And I corrected them and said, actually, what I'm saying is, when you see those things, you need to remind me of my decision. This isn't your decision. I took that away from them. And I said, it's my decision. And I'm codifying it and putting it into writing. And I want you to hold it up. My son and I have already rehearsed just recently. he came over and sat down and held the piece of paper up to show me the page that says when these things are happening. And so he practiced saying it. Pop, you said that you were to stop driving when these things occur. They are occurring. Okay. I'm here to follow through on your instructions.
Can I take it to a tangent?
Please do.
Let's say that there is a spouse. And I'll just use me. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a car guy, not a car nut, but a car guy. You know, and I like driving the car, and you know, I don't have a 64 split window coupe Corvette, but let's say that I did, and I always took it out on Sunday, and my spouse knows that, and my spouse particularly likes sitting on benches for whatever reason, and she probably says, "Why do you like cars for whatever reason?" But when are we not going to sit out in the cold on a bench, and when are we not going to drive the Corvette? And she knows how much I like it, and it might help me, even though I can't drive, but I still should be able maybe to drive it in a park a lot, supervised. Maybe that's an unfair question, but now we got two people supposedly that are driving the bus. And the one has to understand, well, he might like the Corvette, and you might like sitting out on the bench in 32-degree weather, but you probably shouldn't be doing it in your 90s. Set some kind of guidelines, and then maybe the family council sits and says, hey, you know, all this is nice, but after a while, you can't do it. And if you start earlier enough, I suppose somebody's common sense would say, yeah, you know, you're right. And I might even not know that I'm in a car.
Mm-hmm. You're getting the point. Yeah. The bottom line, I think, is to have these conversations openly and early where everyone's voice can be heard. And then something I've emphasized to each of my clients, write it down. Memories get fuzzy over time. Somebody's going to remember something in a very different way than somebody else will remember it, yet they were there in supposedly the same conversation. Well, then write it down. Have everybody sign who witnessed this is indeed what we decided. And that should become, and at least in my family, that is now the guiding document that tells them to include, by the way, I included in that document, we talked it through to the very end. I said, here's the circumstance under which you may pull the plug on any life support for me. And I specified what those things were. Now, I got advice from a doctor, and I had talked to, so I knew what the options were. But here's the key, Bob. I was doing this while I'm not imminently about to expire. I'm healthy and cognizant at the time that I did this. I was, anyhow, I'm not sure I am now, but I was then. And therefore was making decisions and letting them be known at a point in time when we could have a full discussion, and once everyone understood my wishes, we put it in writing, and it is there. And everybody took a copy. Everybody has a copy. No one will ever have to stand in a hospital room with me just barely hanging on and have to say the words, well, I knew Mike, and he would never want to live like this. Well, you know, I've heard people say things like that and moments like that, and then they have to live with the consequences, if they're the one who has the signature authority for the DNC, the do not resuscitate, DNR for the do not resuscitate. But that they have to live with that for the rest of their lives. I didn't want anybody to have to live with my decision because it was mine. And all they'll be doing when that day comes, I told them, bring the contract with you. And when the doctor says, here is the situation, look it up. Find out what I said about that situation and what you're to do. You won't be saying, well, I think. You'll be saying, here's what he wanted. Where do I sign?
Interesting.
And I sleep a whole lot better now having inked that document.
All righty. I'm I've been anointed to handle somebody's affairs. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that the UPS driver and my mom or dad are best buddies because the UPS driver is there every day delivering some trinket that they bought from some place 4 or 5 days ago. Now, fortunately, they're trinkets. You know, how many napkin holders can you get? How many napkin holders can be warehoused in the house is the answer. But what if they start buying stuff? How do you stop that?
Well, first of all, with a third party would be my recommendation. The reason I say that is that most children and or siblings of people who are behaving in that way will be impotent to actually influence the person. And in most cases, I mean, that seems to be fairly universal. It is not a slight to any of them or what they're considered. But it has to do with the relative relationships on through the entire lifetime of their family that they often – it's very rare that they actually can influence somebody doing that or to stop doing it. But an objective third party, a psychologist, somebody who specializes, that actually is an area of specialty now, which many of our listeners may have seen it on television. Hoarding is kind of the farthest end of what you're describing. Yeah. But it is a phenomenon. Well, how do you think you get there? It starts with what you're describing. Before long, those napkin holders take over the living room. Yeah.
Let's go back to the Wayback Machine. This happened to me again, personal experience, uh-huh. I'm a lot younger. And if there was something stupid to do to make a dollar, I did it. And my attorney grabbed me one day and he says, "You are an idiot with a pen in your hand. You're not to sign another agreement until I look at it first." And I followed his advice, and if I hadn't, we probably wouldn't be sitting here today. I'd be out collecting bottles from construction sites, but they don't do that anymore. Anyway, but, you know, that was somebody in my life that, you know, if they said walk on the other side of the street, I just went there. Mm-hmm. Don't touch any agreement until I've seen it. Anyway. So it could be somebody like an attorney, or it could be a trusted friend that maybe has good sense to keep somebody away from scams or just doing something goofy. Because sometimes people that go into retirement a little too early do something goofy because they want to be self-employed, so they buy a franchise. Selling the wrong thing to the wrong people at the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm not saying anything bad about franchises. I worked for a franchise firm for 10 years. It was a fine organization, but some people need not apply. And actually, they were good enough not to sell it to people that need not apply. Anyway, let's come on back here. So we're trying to give advice if we're not the anointed one. Maybe there isn't an anointed one, but it's somebody that could call someone up and say, "Do you really want to do that? And here's why you might not want to." And they might get mad at you, but at the end of the day, if they're still cognizant, they might say, "Thanks for calling." I've had a few of those calls, and I didn't get the call back for a few weeks.
I'm not surprised.
They were pretty mad, but then they go, "But I think you're right." Not that I'm so smart, but sometimes it isn't going to happen, even in the best of circumstances. Don't do this. Now, as a retirement coach, I mean, we've been talking about guarding people against doing things that maybe they shouldn't do. As a retirement coach, I come to you when I'm 45 or I'm 50 or I'm 55 or whatever age I am, and I said, "You know, I got so many years left, and I really like what I do, but what do you think? I've always wanted to do this." And this might be really, everybody wants to own a restaurant. I won't say it. A lot of people want to own a restaurant. Why? Because the people that think they can cook. Well, they might be able to cook a great meal for 2, 3, or 4 people, but they got to do 200 meals as good in a span of a few hours with help that don't know, a steak from a chicken. Mm-hmm. And so how do you keep those people from either not doing it or to encourage them to do it? What do you look for in somebody that comes to you and say, "Hey, Mike, you know, I'm kind of mid-career, late mid-career, early pre-retirement, and I want to kind of make this switch"? Now, we're talking about Fed. So, you know, somebody who works for the federal government has the opportunity to go do almost anything with all the different agencies that do almost anything. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with that person to try to encourage them if they need it or try to discourage them if it's just off the wall?
Well, first of all, as I said earlier, I'm a great believer in assessments. So, in other words, work off of data rather than Kentucky windage. One of the problems that a lot of people incur and find is that, you know, the most common reason why a person goes into a particular kind of work when they retire is what psychologists call replication. Meaning we simply, if you were an accountant for the last 35 years in the work that you did in an agency, you immediately pull out the A's in the newspapers. Well, back when there were newspapers, or you go to that part of Craigslist under the A's and you look for an accountant position. And there's nothing wrong with that, but there may be other things that you could do that would be rewarding and fun and perhaps as or more energizing. By the way, the number two reason that people make a choice to go into something is if it's not replication, the number two is what's called modeling, meaning there's somebody who, you know, their friend's dad retired and he opened up a bait shop. And I always thought that was a cool thing for them to have done. So I think I'll open up a bait shop. And of course, all I need to do to test that is to take a worm and see if they would touch it, which that often will cure them right there. This is bait, my friend. And so but to do a valid assessment, and there are some really good ones out there that help a person to know themselves, to understand about themselves, and then see what the choices are. Because there are many choices, and but the most important thing is, what are the ones that are good for you? What are the ones that really speak to who you are, rather than simply doing something for the sake of doing it, or doing something simply because it's what you always did, and so you'll just continue, and so forth. And I'm not saying that there are people who end up with exactly that, but what I say is validate that. Do the work, do some testing, talk to some people, get some ideas, and then make choices based on that data rather than simply throwing up your hands and saying, well, it's what I always did, so I admit to you that that's going to be the easiest thing to sell yourself into. Yep, I admit it, because if that's what you always had done, that's what you have to sell, you think. But at the same time, allied work, similar but a little different types of work, may be more rewarding for you, if not financially, certainly in terms of your soul. What is it that would really make me feel good? And I work with a lot of people in that area of just discovering alternatives and like that.
Do you ever have somebody come to you and say, you know, I really like what I do, but I think I might like something better, and they take one of your tests that you would provide them, and you sit down and you come up with something that is totally beyond what they're doing, but the test kind of indicates that they might have an interest area there. How tough is it to convince, or does the person just dismiss it and they go, nah, you know, I want to count beans?
Yep. Happens all the time.
Yeah.
Happens all the time. And that's fine. I still think that the person is better off for having made the effort to test, sort of testing options, testing possibilities, even if in the end they end up doing what they would have done anyhow. It's a time in our life. Any transition moment is an opportunity, and it's an opportunity to see what else could it be. And then if we still arrive at the same answer, I would wager that we'll feel better about that answer. We will embrace that answer more positively than we would if we hadn't done the work. So it's a time to really look at ourselves and ask questions. What if? What might? What else could there be?
If somebody takes this assessment tool and upon your discussions, ignoring the assessment tool, you might come up with two or three different paths. Yes. Do you throw out those two or three and then do the pluses and minuses with the individual with each one of the two or three?
Well, if it has a, if there is a, we would look at the strength of the data, meaning with each, if they are top three, there will also be a weight factor for how strongly do each of the three. And so if the other two are fairly weak, then we really can concentrate on the strongest one. If all three are pretty equal, then we ought to explore all three and see if there's some other motivator that might come into play. Such as recently happened, a person decided they could be an accountant anywhere, but she, when she had retired from DOD actually, and went to work with her church, doing once a week, one day a week, but she's doing accounting work for them. Now, she could have gotten a job doing accounting anywhere, but she tested very strongly in her support for her religious beliefs. And because of that, I asked her to look at those possibilities. And she talked to her pastor, actually, is how it happened, who, as it turned out, had just been audited by the diocese or whoever the next authority was, and had been explained to him that they needed a little better accounting, and here she comes to say, if you hear of anything, let me know. I'd like to do some work for the church. To which the pastor said, I'm not sure if we can pay you. She said, don't worry about that. What's the problem? He explained it. She had been in the IG office, by the way, so therefore, to her, she understood. As soon as he said our audit, it seems the IRS has a little more specific rules than most pastors about how the money has to be accounted for. And she said, oh, I understand that. I understand that completely. I guarantee you, from this moment forward, you'll never have that embarrassment again. It's not going to happen. There was nothing missing. I mean, there was no problem, but it simply wasn't accounted for. And she found it all and accounted for it. And it was done.
Wow. Now, for those of you all listening, that was not made up.
No, that's an actual case.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I are one.
Oh. You're an accountant. That's right. I keep forgetting.
Yeah. All righty. This is, I like this, you know, and I'll, do you ever get people, you don't know me that well, but you know me. I really like what I do, but, you know, today I want to do something else, and I don't really want to do something else. It was just too tough a day. Do you get many of those types? That, you know, I don't want to do accounting anymore. I want to go build houses. Mm-hmm. And what do I know about building houses? But that day, I knew everything. How do you talk that person off the ledge?
Well, that's there's a delicacy. You're right. There's a delicacy to that. You know, personally, I rely a lot on the assessment and what the data said about your likes and dislikes. And if it came out strongly that you really do like what you do, and that's a strong place, then we're going to explore what is it that's going on now that is causing you to feel the way that you feel in this moment. And often what we find is that you just had you had an IG report that was that criticized you for something, and you don't think it was and so you're thinking, why am I even doing this? And at my age, well, I don't can take this stuff and like that. And well, now wait a minute, you're talking about throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah. I like that. So not only are you a coach, but you're a quasi shrink.
Quasi.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you can't say that you are because you've got to have those initials or whatever.
That's right.
But you've got real life experiences.
And sure.
That's always tough. I get the same kind of questions from clients. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. And I go, this is where you made it. This is where you spend it. And this is where you lose it. Let's drop the third one. And then you kind of find, like you say, and it was just they had a bad contract or something had gone wrong, and it wasn't bringing them to their knees, but they just had it. But just watch out and don't deal with a certain type and stay over here. And especially now, because people in business, as well as people that are employees, with the economy being not what it used to be, they're getting frustrated and they go, I'm going to go over here and it'll be better. Well, I'm not so sure it's going to be better over there, because that group is just as affected by the economy as the group that you're in. All righty, we've got a few more minutes here, probably a couple more minutes. Any kind of final comments let's take the mid-career and then just quickly and then go to the end. How do you counsel the mid-career person to approach their folks and say, hey, let's make this contract? And because you can see them slipping.
Well, you mean their parents, how to go to their, well, first of all, I think that our hearts have to be in the right place. We have to be, and so check that in yourself. And often those who I speak to who want to talk to their parents, I ask them to sit with me first and let's talk about your motivations. Where is it coming from? What is it that you care the most about? And any answer is an okay answer. It's not right and wrong. But knowing that, then question how now, what will you have that conversation? I'm a great believer in rehearsals. Let's rehearse it. Let's talk about, let's look at worst case scenarios. Suppose it blows up on you and so forth. Can you live with that? And how do you come back from that edge when that occurs? When I asked for one of my uncle's keys to his car, he went into a rage. 6 months later, we were pals again. And I knew that would happen. But that's because in the moment he had to live.
Do I know your uncle?
No.
Okay.
No, the other side of the family.
Okay. All right.
Not that one.
No, actually, we met a few years ago, and we found that we had a common bond with a client who was a family member.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got about 30 seconds left, or Andrew's going to pull the plug. So it's been great having you. Again, your website, Michael?
MyBestDayIsToday.com.
Boy, I'm going to have a good one after that. You, Andrew? Andrew always has a good day. All right, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. And I forget the subject next week. I always forget the subjects, but thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.